Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. It's time for It's All About Food. Thank you. Thank you for joining me today or whenever you are tuning in to this show, be it sometime now or in the future. Thank you. It's going to be a cool show for one reason. It's a cool day. Thank goodness we've gotten through one of those lovely New York heat waves. And I'm just loving the fresh, cool air. And you know how much I love to breathe, right? Well, I am having some really delicious breathing right now. And I hope wherever you are doing some of the same. You know, breathing is probably the most important thing that we do. And then there's drinking water. And then comes the food. And that's where I come in. Especially here on It's All About Food. And guess what we're talking about today? Food. And we're going to start with some really fun food. Do you like fried food? We're going to be talking in a moment with J.L. Fields, the author of a new cookbook, The Vegan Air Fryer, the healthier way to enjoy deep fried flavors. J.L. Fields is the founder and culinary director of the Colorado Springs Vegan Cooking Academy. She's a master vegan lifestyle coach and educator, food for life instructor, chef instructor in the culinary program at the University of New Mexico, Taos, personal chef, career coach, and a corporate consultant offering wellness training, brand representation, and strategic planning services. There's so much to know about J.L. Fields. I don't know if we're going to have enough time in 30 minutes to find out all the wonderful things about her, but we're going to start with air frying. JL, welcome to It's All About Food.
Thanks so much, Karen. It's great to be here. I'm breathing deeply and drinking water high up in Colorado.
Good for you. You get an A plus. A plus. You know, I like to say, I didn't come up with this, my partner did, but I breathe for a living.
That's a good job.
And you know, we all need to do that. And don't forget, especially in times of stress and crisis, the number one thing to do is breathe.
Good advice.
Oh, and the air is so good here. I don't know about where you are right now, but it is just delightfully cool, which is such a relief from the last few sweltering days.
Yeah, I'm in Colorado Springs, and, you know, it's not so bad. We get some hot days, but it cools down at night. And I'll be in New York this weekend, so I'm counting on good weather.
Oh, good. Where do you plan on eating?
Oh, my gosh. Isn't that always the question?
Yes.
I almost always go to Soli Vegan in Harlem because it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
I love that place. And I stay in Brooklyn, so I always, you know, I try to hit up Champs or there's that the little apothecary, the crepery place. Oh, my goodness. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Okay, well, bon appetit.
Thank you.
Yeah, and let's talk about air frying and the vegan air fryer. I have to say, not too long ago, in a course I'm involved in teaching, somebody was asking about air frying, and I didn't know anything about it. But I became an expert quickly and answered the person's question. But but right afterwards, or right about that time, your book arrived. So it was very timely. And I was happy to read it. And now we can find out everything we need to know about it. So let's get started.
Sounds
good.
Tell
us about the air fryer and air frying.
Well, the short version I always say is that I feel like it's magical. but the truth of the matter is, a year ago, I had started to hear about air fryers. And I was seeing a lot of photos that are getting posted up throughout Facebook and all these really great groups that I belong to. And there was this particular group called Power to the Veg that I'm a member of. And one day I said, okay, you guys, just convince me. I mean, I already have enough gadgets. You know, I wrote the book Vegan Pressure Cooking 2 years ago. I've got pressure cookers everywhere. And I said, just prove to me I need this. And they just started posting all of these amazing photos of food that you would normally think of as deep fried food or even like comfort or unhealthy food. And they were just beautifully prepared. Clearly there was great texture to them. And I was convinced. So I just went to Amazon immediately, ordered one. And, you know, 2 days later, I had an air fryer And the timing was perfect because it was spring going into summer. I live in Colorado Springs in a condo that doesn't have air conditioning. And I discovered that I could start to make food that would traditionally be considered messy or is messy, smell up your place, make your place hot, and I could do it and none of those things would happen. So I became a convert very, very quickly.
Well, I had to admit, during these few sweltering days in New York, there were a few things that we would have liked to have turned the oven on for and make, and we didn't.
Yes.
And I'm imagining that the air fryer would be a lot friendlier to use in hot weather.
It really would. And, you know, I definitely know that we're going to be talking about all the fun fried foods that you can make that maybe people haven't been making lately. But I'm going to give you a spoiler alert and tell you right now, I have been baking my weekly sourdough bread boulet in my air fryer because you can bake in it. So yes, on those 95 degrees days, I refuse to turn my oven on at 475 for well over an hour when I can bake it in 20 minutes in the air fryer.
So it's faster too than the oven.
Exactly. It's faster and there's less heat generated and you actually reduce the temperature. So if you normally would bake something at 400 degrees for 30 minutes, you're going to reduce the temperature by 30 degrees and then you're going to reduce the cooking time. You're going to cut it in half. So now you're going to be using 370 on your air fryer for only 15 minutes. And there's just a small amount of heat that's going to come out of the back of the air fryer. The way the air fryers work is that there's a basket inside, but you don't pour any oil into this device at all. And there's a heat, usually there's a heating element at the top of the air fryer, and just above it is a fan. That fan rapidly circulates the hot air around the food, and that's what makes the food crispy. And then a small amount of heat comes out of the back. So you're saving energy, you're saving time, you're not heating up as much. And then your choice for oil is simply, do you want to spritz a little extra virgin olive oil or maybe a little non-GMO canola oil over some of the food just to give it a nice golden color and a little extra crunch? And that's a choice. It's not a requirement.
Okay, very good. Now, the next question I have is, how big is this thing and what does it weigh and how much space does it take on our counters?
Good question, because a lot of people have gadget problems like I do and appliance problems, and they're concerned. So, you know, the first air fryer I bought is a 3.7 quart device. It's definitely, you know, probably about 3 pounds, and it fits on my countertop right next to an electric pressure cooker. It doesn't take up any much more space than that. But I will tell you what I learned quickly was a couple of things. There's only two people in our household, and I learned that if you're a family of four or more, you're probably going to actually want a 5.8 quart or higher size air fryer, one. And also, if you're two, like me, but you've discovered that you can put all kinds of pots and pans inside of your air fryer to use as an oven, you may actually want that larger size simply to turn it into a mini convection oven on your countertop.
And what do they weigh? Are they light?
I mean, I can carry one in one hand. They're probably about 3 pounds.
Are they good to travel with?
Well, you know, it's a good question. And trust me, I do travel with them. I'm on a book tour right now, and so I do travel with them. If you're going on a road trip, 100%. It's super easy to put in, you know, either put it in the box that it came in or just put it in the back seat of your car on the floor. Very easy to travel with. I've done that. You know, I go back and forth between New Mexico and Colorado and do that all the time. I have not flown with one. If I were to fly with one, I would probably make sure it was in the original packing and then probably put some bubble wrap around it because there's a lot of plastic on the outside. That's the material.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm unusual and I travel with all kinds of things, even though air travel has become so unpleasant and the weight that you travel with is critical. But I have traveled with my juicer and my Vitamix when there was a need. So, yeah. You know, I just wonder. Yeah.
2 years ago, when I was on the book tour for vegan pressure cooking, I was traveling with an electric pressure cooker, a stovetop pressure cooker, and an induction cooktop, and I got it to 49.7 pounds. I always just met the cap.
Right, and you wore the same thing every day.
Every single day.
Very good. Okay, let's dive into the book. So a few recipes that popped out. One is fried avocado. I love cooked avocados and I never thought about fried avocado, but that sounds good.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the recipes that I came up with in the book were simply when I'd gone to restaurants. I mean, I didn't fry food at home, and it wasn't because I was opposed to fried food. It was literally because I didn't want to use, you know, 3 or 4 cups of oil or mess up my house. But, you know, if I went out to a restaurant, heck yeah, I would be ordering the French fries and the fried cauliflower. And I remember having some fried avocado at one of my favorite pubs here in Colorado Springs, McCabe's, and I thought, well, if they can fry it in a whole bunch of grease, I know I can figure out a way to fry it in the air fryer. And it's really, you know, it's very simple. You do a very simple breading. You can season it with all, you know, sometimes I make it nice and spicy, and you just spritz a little, you can spritz a little avocado oil on it or a little extra virgin olive oil. And that's what keeps kind of the breadcrumbs down. One of the things that happens in an air fryer with breaded foods is that that fan I was telling you about, it's powerful and it's moving around that hot air really quickly. So when you're using foods like something with a little breading or some panko crumbs, or maybe even if you're making kale chips, you got to know that that powerful fan, it's going to move those things around. So I will squirt, you know, I do a little mist from a can, or, you know, I'll buy one of those misters and pour a little extra virgin olive oil in it. I'll just spritz a little oil to keep it down. If you're trying to reduce oil or you're not using oil in your cooking, believe it or not, you can actually spritz a little vegetable broth. I pour it into a spray bottle and I'll put vegetable broth on, or aquafaba, that wonderful, mysterious liquid gold from the chicken can, will actually help keep those breadcrumbs in place and give it a nice golden color.
Now, America's favorite vegetable is French fries, with its second favorite vegetable, ketchup. And you've got a number of fry recipes. The first thing I want to ask you is, you soak your cut potatoes before you put them in the air fryer. Why do you do that?
You know, I'm going to be honest with you, and I'm going to be honest with your listeners. I do that because I was writing a cookbook, and I know the good principles of cooking, you know, that brings the starch out. And then what's going to happen is when you cook them, they're going to cook more evenly. You're going to get a nicer crisp. And so I'm a big fan of it when you have the time. But at the end of the day, I'm a home cook like most people, and I want my food pretty quickly. And I'm going to be honest and say that most times I actually don't do that. So if you are thinking about doing it, I think it's a fun taste test. Obviously, when I was writing the book, I needed to try these a couple of different ways. And we eat with our eyes first, and I think it's a prettier French fry when you do the soaking. I think they do cook up a little bit more consistently, but it's not a deal breaker.
I have a baked potato latke recipe that I love, and we put them in the oven. But one of the things that we do, and I learned this from my partner, Gary, who actually has the culinary training, to grate the potatoes into a bowl of water and let them soak. And they are prettier because they don't brown that way.
Exactly.
And gets the starch out. So, yeah, that's a good tip. Soak your fries. Just like
that's right.
Soak your nuts. Soak your grains. I like saying soak your nuts, which is a fine book by Karen Calabrese. Okay. Next are your parsnip fries. Fries don't have to be made from potatoes.
No, they do not. The parsnip fries, it's funny. I actually saw the woman who inspired them over the weekend. She's VegFest Colorado was over Saturday and Sunday. And I have a client up outside of Denver who I did some kitchen coaching with. And I went to her house and helped her learn how to use her Instant Pot for some pressure cooking. And she said, please bring your air fryer. I am dying to have parsnip fries. So it was with her that we created the parsnip fry recipe. And it's a really fun way to use some root vegetables in a different way. They're not always going to cook up just the way a potato does, because there's going to be a little bit more water in some. Like sweet potatoes aren't going to come out exactly like a russet potato is. And, you know, like with anything, I just say to folks, get to know your air fryer, start to pay attention, you know, keep opening it. There's a method when you air fry called shaking. So instead of opening up the air fryer to turn food over, all you really do is just jiggle the handle and you move the food inside of the basket, because you don't need to flip it over because the hot air is rotating around it. But when you do go into shake, check on it and look for the color and grab one out and nibble on it and determine if it's hit your sweet spot. But parsnip fries are delicious. It's just a fun way to kind of bring out a sweetness and a peppery taste to, you know, a traditional fry.
I love parsnips, and somebody should write a parsnip book, or at least I don't know about it if there is one, but it's got a very unique flavor. I love adding a little parsnip in soup. I remember when the raw food community started grating parsnip and using it as like a raw rice in sushi. And
That's clever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like it in mashed potatoes too. I'll throw in a little parsnip and some carrots when I'm throwing potatoes in the pressure cooker, and it just makes for a nice color and a bit of a texture change too.
Yeah, it's like a, I don't know, almost like a licorice-y taste.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, next one. I love roasted chickpeas, and you can make them in your air fryer. And I noticed it takes about 15 minutes, which is quick. Do they come out crispy?
Oh, they come out so crispy. They really are my favorite way. I think that the two things that especially a lot of people who are eating vegan or plant-based are going to love is that you can make really delicious roasted chickpeas, and you can also make really great kale chips really quickly and finally find that sweet spot with the temperature. And yeah, these roasted chickpeas come out super crunchy. I put them on, after I prepare them, I immediately put them on a salad. You know, it's been really hot here too. We've had a mini heat wave. And as I mentioned, I don't have an air conditioner. So this summer, we've been calling it the summer of air fried salads. So we start our salad with just really delicious raw chopped veggies from the farmer's market, from the grocery store, just tons and tons of veggies. And then we'll air fry something quickly and we just put that on top. And I'm telling you, roasted chickpeas are great. But I have a great tip too, which is, a lot of times you make those roasted chickpeas, and first off, you want to eat them all. Why wouldn't you? But it is a can and a half of chickpeas if you used a can, and it's not necessarily a serving. And before, you always felt like, well, it's use it or lose it because they get soft. Well, you can actually take those roasted chickpeas, transfer them to an airtight container, and either leave them on the counter or the refrigerator, and then the next day, put them back in the air fryer for just a couple of minutes, and they come right back to life and are nice and crunchy again.
Mmm. They're such a great snack. They're only good.
They're only good.
I mean, I like when I cook up chickpeas, I could just eat plain chickpeas right out of the bowl, just one at a time, just pop them in. But you know,
they're
roasting
the perfect
them is also
food.
Fun
yeah.
too.
Yeah. They were already perfect, and then aquafaba happened. So I mean, it's just like that can. You just look at it on the grocery store and watch people walk by, and it's like, don't you know what you're walking past?
I've done this before, but I've got to take another moment of thanks to the chickpea, which actually I want to call the garbanzo bean. I keep remembering that the name chickpea is not really a friendly name. Apparently it was renamed by the British when they colonized India and called it chickpea because it was meant to be cheap food for the animals and not for the people.
No idea.
Yeah, so it's the garbanzo bean. And okay. I'm saying thanks for the garbanzo bean because it's a perfect food. And we've got the aquafaba. We've got the chickpea flour, which is just incredible. You've got a number of recipes with chickpea flour. It's just amazing what it can do. And yeah. I'm in awe of this bean.
Well, and people ask me a lot, you know, I have a Facebook group called Vegan Air Frying Enthusiasts, and we have about 9,700 members now. And people will, you know, always jump in to say, hey, I'm going to try your recipe. Can I use this? Can I use that? And I always tell people, go for it and then let me know how it turns out. I have no idea. But the question often is, can I use something else in place of chickpea flour? And I say, you can. But one of the reasons I love chickpea flour in this way of frying, air frying, is because I like a higher protein flour, because a lot of times I'm using that flour to also add a crunchiness and a puffiness that we would normally see when it came out of a vat of grease after it'd been deep fat fried, right? So I want you to have that experience, but without all of the fat. And so I like using a chickpea flour, soy flour, or even a brown rice flour. That there is a method to my madness. It's not just, you know, a whim.
Okay, the next thing I want to talk about is tempeh, and I'm a big fan of tempeh. I just had a little earlier today. I've had some wonderful tempeh here at home, of course, and then in some restaurants, and then I've had some horrendous tempeh that almost tastes like what I think dog food would taste like, although I've never eaten dog food. And I think I know what part of the secret is, and you talk about steaming your tempeh before you do anything with it.
Yes, for me, that is I did not love tempeh. When I went vegan and I started eating some foods I'd never eaten before, I felt like to be a good vegan, I needed to eat tempeh, and I could not stand it. And truthfully, this was years ago. The first time I ever loved it, I just threw it in the food processor and then turned it into a tempeh burger. And I did like that. And then once I started pressure cooking, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to throw this in the pressure cooker for just a minute and then just let it sit by itself. And then I will marinate it and use it. And tempeh was the secret. It makes it easier to digest. The texture is a little bit more friendly to the mouth. And it also absorbs marinade in a far better way than if you just did it straight out of the package. So for me, tempeh is the answer. Steaming is the answer.
Now, I don't fry food at home, and I rarely eat fried food, but I have to confess that when I was visiting a second cousin of mine who's a big macrobiotic follower and has a lot of culinary expertise in macrobiotic cooking, he made this incredible fried tempeh that was the best tempeh I ever had. How does the air fryer manage fried tempeh?
Beautifully. I have a recipe in the book called Sambal Goreng Tempeh, which I actually learned about from Seth Tibbett, who is the founder of Tofurky, and he loves making tempeh, and of course has spent a lot of time in Indonesia. And in Indonesia, fried tempeh, which is almost like getting peanuts, you get that just from carts on the street, and it's just deep fried, really spicy tempeh. And so I thought, well, I'm going to try to do a version that's more like an entree for the book. And so in this case, I did use a little bit of non-GMO canola oil in the mix when I was making it with some really hot spices. And of course, I'm also adding some dulse flakes, and I'm using all kinds of hot spices and sauces, and it just puffs up and it has that crunch. And that's the thing that I think people may not realize. You really do get crunchy food out of an air fryer.
I'm just getting that crunchy food fantasy in my mouth right now. It's good. I'm glad I ate before, though, because otherwise it would be quite painful right now. Very good. Well, let's see. We just have a few minutes left. Was there one food or one experience that was especially surprising for you with the air fryer?
Well, I think the game, you know, I joke and say that the reason people who eat a plant-based or vegan diet, there are usually two reasons they want an air fryer: for the French fries and for the tofu. So I will say that I had high expectations for the tofu, and I was not disappointed by that, that the tofu actually comes out beautifully and is reminiscent of what you're going to find at an Asian restaurant, which I think is really exciting. But I was actually surprised how well battered food actually does in the air fryer. And there are a few little tricks, and I know we're running out of time, so I won't bore people, but I'll just say parchment paper is your friend. Sometimes you might want to put battered food in the freezer to let the batter set a little bit. And sometimes just go for the mess. I have a battered buffalo cauliflower that's nice and messy, but it's ultimately going to go into a pan of Frank's hot sauce and garlic. So why not just throw that yummy, crumbly, battered, cooked batter that came off and throw it in there? So sometimes there's nothing wrong with a mess.
I just have one more question. You mentioned parchment paper, and I remember reading in your book that you said you have to be careful with parchment paper and only leave like a half inch exposed.
Yes.
And why is that?
It's because the heating element is above the food, and sometimes it's really easy. I think when we're using parchment paper in the oven, we'll throw a big piece down and throw whatever we've got in, and we can walk away. Well, in this case, it's a very confined area, and if your parchment paper is up too high, it could hit the heating element, and that's a fire danger. So you want to be careful.
Okay. Well, then that's a very important point.
Yes.
And I don't know that everybody reads every word in a cookbook, and I highly encourage it, because the things that I learn are typically not in the recipes, but in the introduction and forward before you get to the recipes. So
yeah, there's a reason we write those. It's always easy to go right to the good stuff. And it's like, please, please, let me explain this to you.
It's not filler. It's important.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, JL, thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food. It's really a pleasure to talk to you and, quote, get to know you a little bit there. I am curious about that macrobiotic experience you talked about in the book that you said is a long story, but I guess I'll have to hear it some other time.
Another time. Maybe I'll get you on my radio show. Well, thank you. And thanks for having me, Karen. I'm a big fan. So this was really exciting.
Thank you so much. Woo! Well, that was JL Fields, the author of The Vegan Air Fryer, The Healthier Way to Enjoy Deep Fried Flavors. And I want to recommend that you go to her website. She has jlgoesvegan.com and jlfieldconsulting.com. There's a lot more to this woman than just vegan food, and I'm sure you would like to find out more. So check out her website and this book, The Vegan Air Fryer. Fantastic. Okay, before we move on to my next guest, I wanted to give you some updates here at Responsible Eating and Living headquarters, where I live, responsibleeatingandliving.com. Yeah, so, you know, we have this daily blog called What Vegans Eat, where I post what my partner and I, Gary, eat every day, and it's linked to recipes. And there have been some fun things that we've been posting this week. For example, we went to an event, I think it was on Thursday, for the Manhattan Council member, Helen Rosenthal. And she had an event. She's running for a second term. She's voted for a number of very animal-friendly bills and resolutions. And she's a friend to the animal community, something that we need everywhere to promote better treatment of animals for lots and lots of reasons. And at that event, she came out as a vegan, which was really, really exciting. And I'm going to have her on the show next month, kind of talk more about that. So that is exciting. And you can read What Vegans Eat Day 890 to read more about that. And that includes a wonderful trip to Candle Cafe West, probably our all-time favorite vegan restaurant, period. Okay. Another thing I wanted to mention, you know, I love making homemade yogurt, and I typically make it with almonds. I've talked about it a bunch of times on this show, and it just continues to amaze me and tickle my tongue. So I like to make it with almonds. But you can make yogurt with other nuts and seeds, which is so fantastic. I just make it with almonds and water, and then the bugs, which you can get from probiotic capsules or from a previous batch of yogurt or from an unsweetened plant yogurt made and purchased in the store. Well, before we left on a trip, I had a bunch of almond yogurt that I put in the freezer. I didn't want to lose it. I didn't want to waste it. I don't like wasting food. And then when we came back, I defrosted it, stirred it up, and it was fine, which was great news. And then I wondered, are the bugs still alive? And I ended up making another batch, but this time I used cashews. And I used some of that yogurt to populate the probiotics in the yogurt. And it's fantastic. It worked. And I'm very happy. And I'm happy to share that with you. And I really encourage you to make your own. And I normally make it in the oven, which has a dehydrator option so that I can run it at like 110 degrees Fahrenheit. But it was a really hot day. I was not going to put the oven on, not at 110 or anything. And I just left it for 24 hours or a little bit longer, wrapped up in a nice cozy blanket, and it made a perfect cashew yogurt to enjoy. Fantastic. Well, I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. You can send me comments and questions at info@realmeals.org. And when you have the chance, I hope you will follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We're on Pinterest and iTunes. Our show is archived on the Progressive Radio Network, also on the Responsible Eating and Living page with transcripts, almost 9 years worth of all kinds of wonderful interviews. I'm going to take a very quick break here, a few seconds, and then bring on my next guest. We'll be right back. is Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me. And I'm very excited about part two of this program. I am going to bring on my guest, Jasmine Leva. And she's just Jazz to her friends. And maybe she'll let me call her Jazz. She's unapologetically an artist, born in D.C., a city that used to be more appreciative of doctors, lawyers, and politicians. She moved to Los Angeles for college to pursue her dream while completely dismissing America's. After 3 years of itching to do, and despite uninvited judgments, she left school a year shy of her degree for a TV production job. She is debt-free. That's nice. From there, she went on to work as an associate producer on a NAACP-winning docuseries entitled Unsung, and shortly after was given the opportunity to write and produce on Being, a docuseries highlighting dynamic entertainers in film and music. Happy to be doing what she loved, but simultaneously unhappy about putting that passion into someone else's vision, she decided to let go of her 9-to-5 and come into her own reign of pure artistry. Just Jasmine, no limits and no boss, except for her own creativity. She went on to star in commercials and print ads for major brands like Nissan, Sony, Apple, Uber, American Express, Diesel, Black People, Meat, Credit, Sesame, Michelle Watches, Elle Magazine, and more. She also starred in the Lifetime show My Crazy Ex and is scheduled to star in her first indie film in 2017. However, she did not lay her behind-the-camera talents to rest. Jasmine and her fiancé, Kenny Leva, are currently producing their own feature-length documentary, The Invisible Vegan, a film that chronicles Jasmine's personal experience with plant-based eating. The film also explains how plant-based eating is directly linked to African roots and how African-American eating habits have been debased by a chain of oppression stemming from slavery, economics, and modern agribusiness. Not to sound pedestrian, but the sky's the limit and her evolution will be televised. I love this story and I can't wait to talk to you, Jasmine Leva. Hi.
Hello, how are you? And just so you know, you can call me Jazz.
Oh, thank you, Jazz. I didn't want to, you know, jump to that, but I like the name Jazz, not just because I love jazz music. And I love Jasmine tea and all things jazzy.
I love Jasmine tea and jazz music too. Like Ella Fitzgerald, that's my girl.
Oh, yes. I love her. Yeah. And I actually got to see her once in San Francisco a long time ago. She was awesome.
Are you serious? I'm jealous. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'm not young. So I was young when I saw her. Okay. But, you know, she's still good in the videos and on records. It's all there. She's still huge in terms of her character and voice and interpretation.
Yes.
And nobody else. Yeah, nobody else is quite like her. Oh, okay. Well, maybe.
I agree.
Now we'll talk about you and the Invisible Vegan. So let's talk about what is the Invisible Vegan.
So, The Invisible Vegan, it's a documentary about plant-based eating in marginalized communities, and it focuses on Black communities, and it uses my narrative as a foundation. And I was motivated to do this project, one, because, you know, I've been flirting with, well, now I'm a vegan, but before I flirted with it for the better part of a decade. And a lot of my friends who, you know, were people of color, they would, you know, they would laugh at it. They didn't understand my choice. And I was just wondering, like, why is it that they don't get it the way that I get it? And so when I was looking at a lot of the vegan documentaries on the market and just reading up on veganism, it clicked to me, you know, wait, a lot of this material isn't necessarily formatted for, you know, people of different races and people from different economic backgrounds. So I wanted to do a documentary that kind of filled that void so people that I love can also get information that might, you know, save their lives.
Well, I told you when I saw the trailer how much I thought this information was needed, and I really believe that, and I think it's important on a number of levels. I don't know if we'll get to all of them, but we'll touch on a few. So I really thank you for this, and it's courageous and exciting and scary probably to do this, and expensive.
Mm-mm. It is very expensive. I'm actually I'm running a crowdfunding campaign right now. We just launched it about 5 days ago. We're about 15,000 in. The goal is 50,000. We're 15,000 in. We've just been given a $25 matching grant offer. So it looks like, you know, 10,000 more, and
great.
We got the money we need.
Fantastic. Congratulations. And I'm sure you'll reach
Thank you.
It. And like I said, it's such an important message. So let's talk. Why did you call it the invisible vegan? Did you feel invisible?
I called it the invisible vegan. It's just, it's a novel by Ralph Ellison called The Invisible Man. Great novel. And in his intro, you know, he's saying how he feels not only, you know, invisible and when he's in white spaces, but also because fit into a certain stereotype, he feels invisible in black spaces as well. So I kind of identified with that feeling. So that's one reason I chose it. And then just for, I guess, a more visual reason, when you think about the vegan movement, well, now it's a little bit more colorful and diverse. But before, you know, when you think about an animal rights activist, when you think about people that care about the environment, people at the forefront of the health movement, you don't see a lot of black spaces, and sometimes the black people that I see in those spaces, I feel like they don't represent, you know, the kind of women I grew up with. Like, you don't see the, you know, like the cool guy that listens to hip hop. You don't see the, you know, the cool chick with her cornrows and her tight jeans and her hair weave, you know, kind of repping animal rights. But these types of women exist, and even though they might not be mainstream, these are the type of women that, you know, some little girls in the inner city might identify with. So they deserve visibility, too. It shouldn't just be this, you know, like one type of black person that's put in the forefront, which is usually someone that, you know, has this kind of non-threatening look instead of not non-threatening. That's the wrong word. But someone perceived as non-threatening to the dominant class, instead of just having like a lot of diverse blacks in this movement to relate to different people in our community.
We've got a lot of problems in our culture, no question about it. And I'd like to think that we're moving forward. It's a little challenging right now with this crazy federal government that we have, because it seems like everything's going backwards quickly. But let's put that aside and focus on all the good that's going on. This movement definitely has been promoted or brought into the mainstream by white male doctors. There's been a lot of work that's done on the ground by a very diverse group of people, but the ones who have gotten the most attention are white and male. You know, and a lot of the great women activists of any color, you know, don't seem to get the notoriety that these white doctors are getting. But, you know, okay, I accept it. That's just the way things roll.
I appreciate you. And that's something I, like what you just said, I appreciate it. Like, I appreciate, you know, you just owning up to that instead of, you know, what a lot of people try to do. You know, they make it seem like racial inequality is something that's just in black people's heads. Like, it's just something that we're manifesting that doesn't exist. So for you say, like, no, you know, people in your culture, they do a lot for the movement. They're just not shown. Thank you for recognizing that.
You're welcome. Well, I can honestly say I don't know what it's like to be in your skin. But
thank you.
I want to say that I try and empathize, you know, and it's not a pretty world that we live in. I know that. And it's not a fair world. And, you know, I do whatever I can. Now, one of my favorite people on the planet happens to be a medical doctor, Dr. Milton Mills.
Oh.
And he's in your trailer, and I assume he'll be in your film.
Yes.
And I've known him a long time, and I just love this man. He's just so good. And when I was pondering your title, I thought about Dr. Milton Mills because I've interviewed him on this show recently this year and then 5 years ago. And when I talked about this like last week or the week before, when the documentary What the Health came out, that Dr. Milton mm-hmm. Mills is in, my interview with him from 5 years ago is getting like tons of hits. And mm-hmm. I realized it was because nobody else has anything out there on Dr. Milton Mills. You know, there are some other white doctors in the film, and I'm sure other people are searching for them too, but there are plenty of other websites that have stuff on them. And so I'm not feeling that traffic as much. But mm-hmm. I'm like the only one who has Dr. Milton Mills out there because he's fantastic. But I felt like he's invisible. And now he's becoming exactly. a little more visible.
Right. And what's awesome about Dr. Milton Mills is he really knows his stuff. Like if you're talking about plant-based eating, he can give you the environmental reasons behind it, the health reasons behind it, the animal rights reasons behind it, aside from just the medical part of it. So he's a one-stop shop. He's the real deal, and I was honored to be able to get him for this project.
Yeah, well, he's getting his hands dirty every day.
Mm-hmm.
and doing really phenomenal work. The other thing that people knee-jerk respond to when I'm promoting a plant-based, healthy, vegan diet, wop, 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 is that it's a privilege. It's for privileged people who can afford it, who can go to Whole Foods, Whole Paycheck, whatever. Can you talk about that?
Yes. When the problem is, like, sometimes when you have people who are trying to, like, if you have people in the movement who are trying to get other people to go vegan, you know, you have to address that some people live in food deserts. You have to address that some people are using food stamps. So you need to tell, you know, there needs to be specific instructions for people who don't have the means to go to Whole Foods, who can't go to Sprouts, who can't get these, like, fancy alternatives that, you know, help people bridge their way into a vegan diet. Like, you need to make this palatable for them, because everyone does not have the same amount of access to, like, fresh, healthy foods. And even making that, you know, a bigger issue kind of on our national agenda, there are certain things that should be equal, and there are certain things that, you know, the amount of money you make should dictate, you know, your access to certain items. Like, if you make a lot of money, okay, yeah, you can buy your name brand shoes and you can buy your expensive dresses, but every child, I think, deserves a fair opportunity. Every child and adult alike deserves their opportunity to, like, fresh, healthy, organic food that hasn't been, you know, pumped with antibiotics, who, you know, like, just fresh fruits and vegetables for everyone. Like, that should be, like, a basic human right.
Yes. And I hope one day our civilization gets there. But we are not born equal, as much as we like to say we are. Every child is entitled to clean air, clean water, abundant healthy food, an excellent education, and the opportunity to be whatever it is that their soul wants them to be. And we've got a long mm-hmm. way to go before that happens.
Right. And because
honestly,
you know,
I just want to add that every non-human animal has that right, too.
Exactly, exactly. And the thing about this, like, food is it's a life or death issue. And people don't look at it like it's a life or death issue because, you know, having poor food options, that's not something that will kill you instantly. But that's the difference between, you know, a mother's child living to 100 or, you know, only living to 50 and passing away because of clogged arteries and heart disease or diabetes or cancer. So it's definitely life or death. And if people care about, you know, the life of their children and their own lives, this is something that we need to start, you know, kind of rallying for in our communities.
You know, I mentioned our current government before, and again, I don't want to get too into it, but we are being fed a new story, a story of lies, a story of fantasy, a story of false truths. And in some ways, our culture has been fed lies probably since this country started after demolishing the Native American race. And then from then on. And, you know, we keep trying to see the world through rose-covered colored glasses and not seeing the truth and not seeing the victims through the decades, which we need to if we're ultimately going to rise above and become what we should become. We need to really acknowledge all of the wrongs that we've done and our ancestors have done. But while we're swallowing this story that we're being marketed to and manipulated to, many of us who start to have a little means want to have the benefits. And some of the benefits are eating rich foods and eating animal foods without realizing the story and the history behind it. And I'm sure that many African Americans feel this way too. And that's where your film comes in.
Yes. And it's also countering years of advertisements, because when you think about it, you know, a lot of the choices we make as Americans, we were conditioned to make those choices. So, you know, if you have been fed meat all your life, it's like, you're attached to meat. You're addicted to it because that's what you were given. That's all you know. And same thing, like you look at these commercials for food. I mean, in my lifetime, I've probably seen a McDonald's commercial, you know, 5 million times. Whereas how many times have I seen, you know, PSAs for going vegan or eating healthy or eating plant-based? So this is, you know, like messages like this. I'm glad they have like all these documentaries coming out because I feel like this is countering that. So we're putting something new into the psyche. Like we're putting, you know, this is inception. We're planting new seeds. So, you know, hopefully in the future, you know, our kids grow up on different messages than like just these food advertisements.
And what foods do you want to be eating? Do you want to be eating the foods that you think are your culture's foods, which were actually brought upon you from slaveholders that were just giving you the worst thing they possibly could? Or do you want to eat the real foods from your culture, which are healthy and nourishing and were taken away from you?
Yeah, and even when I think of, like, my culture's food, like, as far as, you know, the scraps that we were given on the plantation, you know, I just look at that, you know, that was just an example of our genius. You know, when we had nothing, we were given scraps and we were able to turn it into a delicacy. And that shows how creative we are as a people. But the pig feet and the chitlins, like, that doesn't represent, you know, our culinary tradition. Like, that's slave culture. And even though slave culture is a part of Black culture, it doesn't encompass it. So, you know, when people think about, like, Black culture, I want them to think about African culture. And yes, in Africa, before all this, like, slave situation happened, you know, we were eating fresh foods. We were growing crops. You know, the way we prepare vegetables, like, we brought those traditions over to America. So just knowing that, like, you know, we contributed more than pig feet to, you know, the culinary arena in America. So just kind of giving people that sense of pride, like, you know, salads, you know, that's a part of who we are too, you know?
The unfortunate thing is that the sad standard American diet is being exported all over the world, including to Africa and many of the countries there, and with detrimental effects. So a lot of cultures that have eaten some wonderful diversified foods, all kinds of whole grains and roots and plants, are more and more not.
And I think in a lot of people, they don't know, they don't understand the power of their choices. You know, when they eat a piece of bacon, you know, they don't think that, hey, you know, the commercial farms that produce this bacon are put in African American communities, and it makes their property value go down. And because of a lot of, you know, the manure and the chemicals getting their water, and then they end up getting sick. Like, we don't realize the system of environmental racism that we're participating in when we eat these kinds of foods. So I also think if more people kind of knew the ramifications that come behind what they put in their mouths, you would have a lot more people who would make conscious choices. I mean, don't get me wrong. You have a lot of people who would just say, I don't care, eat their bacon, egg, and cheese anyway. But, you know, it, again, like, it all starts with just the message out there and just keep pushing it. And not forcing it on people, but putting it out there, just educating people so, you know, they can make choices out of knowledge instead of just eating out of ignorance.
So important on so many levels. And, I mean, it really is so unfortunate, but we have maybe one of the good things from the current federal government administration is that we've learned how really racist our country is. And I thought it was getting better. But now we know that many people have been harboring so much. And I'm so ashamed.
No, don't. No, don't be ashamed. Like, you have me on this show. So you should be, happy. And like I said, you acknowledging it, that's what it's about. I don't know why there's this disconnect and a lot of people don't want to own up to white privilege. Like, for example, I'm attractive. A lot of the opportunities I get, even though I'm qualified for them, I get a lot of opportunities just because of the fact I'm attractive, like attractive privilege. And I would have no problem with owning up to that. So when it comes to white privilege, I don't understand why people just, you know, they can't say like, yo, it's messed up. It's not my fault, but white privilege definitely exists. Like, there are going to be a lot more people, like, if you're African-American, you know, you're going to run into more races that don't want to give you a job and don't want to give you an opportunity than a white person. And that's just reality.
And we must resist and educate.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
so
don't try to sweep it under the rug and just, like, you exactly what you're doing, just owning up to it.
Okay, let's lighten it up a little bit and talk about some delicious food. Can we do that?
All right, let's do it. Yes, we can.
Okay, so you're in
I don't want you crying over there.
You don't want to what?
I said, you said you were crying. I said, I don't want you crying over there. So, yeah, let's lighten it up.
I wear all my emotions on my sleeves. I don't hold it in. It's just like I press a button and I pour. it's the only way I can stay sane. So, tell me about eating in Los Angeles. Where are your favorite places? What do you like?
Ooh. Okay, so in Los Angeles, being a vegan, again, if you have a certain amount of means, it's really easy. They have vegan spots everywhere. I stay in the Valley. They have, what do I like over in the Valley? They have this spot, Lemonade. It's not fully vegan, but they have a lot of great vegan options. Mencino Farms, they have this kind of vegan barbecue sandwich that is for the gods. Alok is great. Cafe Gratitude is a favorite. Sage is delicious. Like, they have so many, like, vegan versions of whatever you want. Like, if you want a Peruvian vegan spot, they got it. They used to have this, I think they shut it down, Turban, Cowboys and Turban, a vegan, Indian, and Mexican fusion restaurant. Like, just any vegan combination you want. Like, it's in Los Angeles.
And do you cook?
I dabble.
Could you do that again? That was a great sound.
I'm not going to lie. I am definitely not going for Michelin stars in my kitchen by any means. And I could put together something that tastes decent, but I'm not. Like, I eat more so for nourishment. Like, this morning, I had, you know, I just did like a breakfast smoothie with like celery and lettuce and apples and acai and some lemon juice. Like, I'm out here, like, for breakfast. Okay, what can I eat that's going to give me energy, that's going to get my skin right, that's going to balance my pH levels? Like, I'm more so worried about that than, you know, let me put together this, like, restaurant meal. And then me being a woman, too. You know, when you're a woman, you got so much going on in your stomach. When you start throwing in too many ingredients, it's like chemical reactions start happening. And I'm just like, no, I just want to keep it simple. Let me just eat this sweet potato and some sauteed kale for lunch and just call it a day and be the better for it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Mixing it up sometimes to so many of us can just, no matter what it is, it's too complicated. Keeping it simple, I love it.
Yeah, just keep it simple for breakfast. Okay. Yeah, just oatmeal with some almond milk. There you go.
There you go. So, Jasmine, how can people help with the Invisible Vegan? Where do they go?
If you would like to, now we're trying to raise licensing funds for a lot of the third-party footage, music, and photos used in the film. So you can go to www.theinvisiblevegan.com, click the donate tab, and it'll take you to our crowdfunder. And if you could donate to this project, help us make it look lovely, that would be amazing.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for talking to me today, Jazz. And I wish you all the best with The Invisible Vegan. I can't wait to see the full film.
Thank you so much, Karen. It was awesome being on your show.
Thank you. I'm sending you hugs.
And I'm sending you love right back.
Okay, love, love, love. All right, we just have like a minute left. So I just wanted to remind you, because I don't plug this show enough, if you like this show, It's All About Food, I like it, and I know a lot of people do. Can you, like, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, at Responsible Eating and Living, responsibleeatingandliving.com. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Pinterest. We have our daily blog, What Vegans Eat, at responsibleeatingandliving.com. The show, It's All About Food, is on iTunes, and it's here at Progressive Radio Network and at my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. We archive all those shows with transcripts. So let us know. Let us know if you like us, because, you know, we need to hear that. I know. I need to hear it. Otherwise, follow me and email me. That's what I meant to say, at info@realmeals.org if you have comments and questions. And thank you. Thank you again for listening. I'm Karen Hartglass. This has been another episode of It's All About Food. Have a delicious week. Thank you.